In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Filled with odd fright, see Jurassic right. Bathe in amber light. See Jurassic Ride. See Jurassic Park.
This is the start of the podcast. In-person podcast recording.
Oh my gosh. What do we even do? What do we say?
I don't even know.
How do we do this anymore, Steven?
It's like sitting across from you. I mean, when was the last time I even saw you?
I came over to your place one evening for some... Oh, no! I came over to your place to talk about, I think, Fallen Kingdom. No, it wasn't. It was short.
Wait, was really the last time you came over was when the last time you did SJR?
Yeah. Yeah. And then we went out to a bar. I forget what it's called, but it was a place that I sang Michelle Branch's Everywhere. And someone came up to me afterwards and was like, that was really good.
You have a better memory than I do, but you're right, because that was like a beginning of the year. Like, you know, we've got like a year and a half from Dominion.
That's right.
Which is funny because you've been proven right since, because Justin Lin joked about a crossover with Jurassic Park, Jurassic World. So you've actually been proven correct since that time. So,
God, we need it. Fast and Furious, Transformers, and Jurassic Park. Because then the tour at Universal Studios is just the easiest thing. They just go through it.
Yeah.
And I guess Folding Kong, because that's come back around.
And
you have to update some of those visuals. Peter Jackson's probably like, so here's the old Kong movie.
Well, but also we're kind of in a Brendan Fraser
renaissance.
Well, I mean, he's on Doom Patrol. But I almost would say like we're about to hit like where he's going to like anything that he was like huge in is going to be.
The thing
brought back Jurassic World style,
right?
Brought back Muppet style, brought back, you know, Star Wars style, where it's like, you know, it's been 20 years, 30 years since The Mummy 3,
right?
Or whatever. And it's like Brendan Fraser is going to come out of retirement.
Mummy Awakens.
Yeah.
Gods and Monsters Awaken.
The Mummy World. And that's how you get that crossover.
Can we get, I know we haven't started talking about Jurassic Park yet, but can we also get Ashley Judd back? What, they were in a creepy movie together, right? Do I remember this correctly?
Arachnophobia?
No, although...
Directed by Frank Marshall, producer of Jurassic Park.
That's true. I would love both of them to be in the new Arachnophobia. I wouldn't mind a new Arachnophobia, but they were in a weird movie together where it was like very creepy and Brendan Fraser was like living out in the woods.
Oh, I don't know.
Great actors, both of them. They did great jobs, both of them. I hope... I feel bad recommending anything these days because if I haven't seen it recently, because then I go back and I'm like, I should have not told anyone.
I was going to say, we're recording our Lost World episode in a bit.
Yeah.
But the engine helicopters just flew by.
They did. They did. We thought it was just us on the island, but we'll talk about that next episode.
What am I doing here? Basically, I just texted you. I'm like, I miss you. Listeners, you know, like I haven't done that much with this podcast this year. I think it's just because, you know, it's that thing of like, you want to talk about the thing that you like.
Yes.
And kind of getting back to the roots of that. And so I was like, I just want to sit down and watch Jurassic Park again.
Right.
That's it.
Of course.
And I want to hang out with you.
That's all it has to be.
So that's the premise. I was like, this is a very like Evan thing, our buddy Evan Kernett, but I was just like, sitting with Omar. Like, is that what the series is going to be called?
A bit of background, I suppose, in case folks need it. I'm Omar.
Mm-hmm.
We met in college. And I want to say one of the first things we talked about was Jurassic Park.
Oh, definitely. And I still remember that first picture because it's you, me, and Gellner.
Yep.
Alexander Gellner. And for some reason in my head, you had blonde hair, but it was me that had blonde hair.
Yeah. Well, I did at one point have blonde streaks when I was in middle school. So maybe you were just picking up on those.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and
sympathetic vibes.
Well, and it's funny because I think, and I don't know if I know how you feel about this, but for me, and we're the same age, obviously, but like, you know, kind of set things down after Jurassic Park 3. Obviously, mm-hmm. the franchise kind of went dormant. And so in college, I was like, well, I'm going to be like the arty filmmaker.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to be Quentin Tarantino. I'm going to be a Criterion Collection motherfucker.
It was, yeah, it was like rolling your eyes at the people who were like, I'm going to make an indie film like Tarantino. And you're just like, oh, Sundance approved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You're just like, no. I'm talking red, white, blue.
I watch late period Godard.
Yeah.
What? Not even French people watch that.
A Woman is a Woman. Oh, what a sellout project.
I love that movie. But it was one of those things where, I mean, obviously, I still like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Like, I had my 22nd birthday that Annie and Ingrid and Monica, like, and Tessa threw. That was a Jurassic Park party.
Yep, yep.
But that's actually around the time that we met.
Yeah.
Because I met you right at the end when I was graduating.
That's right.
And which is kind of funny, actually, in that way of like, we're in college, or at least for me, like in college, you kind of like reinvent yourself. I'm obviously going to film school. I feel like we saw the Michael Bay. I think we were perplexed by the people that wanted to be Michael Bay or like wanted to be blockbuster filmmakers, because it just was like the conception of that was so far away from like what the kind of stuff we were doing.
Just so everyone knows, we went to a theory school.
Yes.
We were told it was the second best film school in the world in terms of like having like who are it, like teachers were and stuff like that. I don't know how you judge humans. I'm sort of not into that whole pageantry of academia. But at what was supposedly the second best film school in the world, we learn things like where does film exist? Ontologically.
Shuzette.
Right? Yes. Shuzette and Fabula. What is the effect of a cut from one thing to another? A montage. We're not talking about Kuleshov Rocky effect. Montage. Kuleshov effect. Also, here's some things. What does the camera represent as the ideological construct of the human psyche and experience, right? Fun things like this. And then you'd have students who would raise their hand and go, okay, yeah, but how do I make $1 million? And that was like when we
sit
were like,
sit down, Tarantino.
This is not the school for this.
Well, yeah, so.
Which is not to say, I think that honestly, if Michael Bay gone to our school, he would have eaten it with a silver spoon because he would have been like, let's talk about musicals.
Yeah, I don't know, to me, like, and maybe this just shows like the kind of college experience I had where like college was like the magic school bus.
Great.
Make mistakes, get messy, you know, all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I felt like you and I had a very, even though, again, we didn't, because you graduated a year after me and I ended up sticking around an extra year and we worked together on stuff.
Yeah.
But like, to me, like LA was like the enemy, you know?
Yes.
It was like people who did summer internships, I'm like, you're insane. Like, we have to go there anyway. Why are you? But why? I'm like, oh, you were so smart because then you had a job at the moment you graduated.
I had no idea. I taught after school science classes.
you know, and I went to London and dropped out after 6 months because I was like, this is dumb.
Yeah,
it was just that kind of thing where I think you and I like shared a spirit of like, this is like, well, to me, like, you're a person who I like, I'll tell people all the time, like, I love that Omar will do these cool projects because he loves doing them. And it's like, that's the point of creativity.
Right. You said at one point to me, and just so everyone knows, keep track of this, because whenever I say just so everyone knows, this is the stuff that has to get highlighted in the notes. Steven was the legend of our film school.
Spirit Award winner.
Spirit Award winner. They resurrected. They pulled it out of the Walt Disney vault. They resurrected an award they hadn't given out in decades, I think, because they were just like, Steven's got to get this.
Well, in every year that they give it, on either side of when I got it, it always goes to two people. I was the only year they gave
you it. You were the only one that got one, because they were just like, Steve, come on. Who else?
UCSB. I mean, I literally made a film about a building and honoring the legacy of, like, when the film department changed.
You did a whole festival.
Yeah. And I got, and to me, I guess I haven't watched it recently because a lot of that stuff is like on DVD, weirdly.
Yeah.
And not digital. But I'm weirdly proud of the fact that I got like five teachers to act in a short together.
That was great.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, and it's funny because, again, it's like weirdly meeting you and talking to you about Jurassic Park was like, oh, like this is like I forgot that, you know, as much as like Lost in Translation made me want to go to film school. Jurassic Park was like the magic of cinema.
Yeah.
For the first time. Lord of the Rings made me like the extended editions made me like, oh, wow. Like, look at the process of making a movie. That's
right.
Cool.
100%. The experience of it. Yeah.
And then Lost in Translation was like, ooh, the art. Like,
yes.
You know, so. Yeah, so when I met you and we were just talking about Jurassic Park, it was like, oh my God, like I forgot how like good that.
Right. It's, yeah, because I, where I came from, and I wish it, you know, I really wish it was more arty. And there were like a few arty.
Birdemic City.
No, okay, literally, literally my hometown is where Birdemic takes place. So like when they go to like go see a movie or something like that, they're going to the Asian market we always go to. I'm just like, you got to pick up some mochi on your way to this fictional film. But for me, it was like Clerks. And Desperado and stuff like that. I should say El Mariachi and those films. But the thing is, they were, and I was so excited to do that because they were so just, you pull a camera and it was the ethos of it. It was just like, there's no, it's very Yoda. Like there is no like trying.
Yeah, yeah.
You just go out and you make the damn film and you put it out there. And if someone's like, there's a continuity error, you're like, I don't care. But
Jurassic Park, I mean, come on. Yeah. Where's that cliff go?
Where'd the cliff go?
The Rexy stepped over, and then 5 minutes later, it's a cliff.
And
what's
then
happening?
They fall down. Yeah.
Look, I'm going to draw a sloping diagram to try and make sense of this.
It's a vampire dinosaur. Don't worry about it. She can float. But those movies and those things that were so seminal for what I wanted to do of just like, just screw you system were contingent, though, upon, it wasn't screw you system to like, we hate the bad movies that are made that offend us. Mm. It was, we actually would love to make Jurassic Park. But we only have these five things laying around, or we're going to make a movie talking about, like, I mean, in Clerks, a huge portion of it is like talking about Jaws. It's like a thing of it.
Star Wars.
And Star Wars. It's a, yeah, huge element of it. And it's sort of like the culture of these things. It's like the whole ecosystem of it. It's kind of like that art made more art. You know, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas made movies, or I should say, you know, their filmmaking teams made movies. And those, and then people made movies because of those movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's great because it wasn't like a reaction to that sort of. So it was always this like weird home base.
Yes, that's how I feel about Jurassic Park.
Yeah, exactly. Like as a teenager, I was just like, oh, let's figure out what else we can do. They made a movie where they say the F word in every other line. I love this. But then it was just like, but home is Jurassic Park.
Well, and to be fair to Jurassic Park and why I think it in that way that like, you know, as much as art, you know, In the Mood for Love is really my favorite movie, whatever.
Right.
Steven Spielberg made a monster movie that was elevated.
Yes.
So it became more than the sum of its parts in that sense.
I truly think, because, I mean, we've talked about this quite a few times. Like, I have such a funny, like, familial relationship to the movie Jurassic Park. But, like, stepping out of, like, my own stuff when I think about everyone whenever we talk about Jurassic Park, I truly, truly think it planted this philosophical, I want to say seedling, not even seed. I think it was mostly sprouted by the time it got.
It was the watermelon and regrets.
Right. Where people really did stop to think about what are our conscious actions and what do we do? What's our responsibility? What's our relationship to nature? Stuff like that. And it wasn't this blatant anti-science sort of thing. It was this deeper feeling. But I think that so much of it was sucked into the fact that a T-Rex knocks down a bathroom. You know, the fear and the experience of it as kids, there, I feel like there was this non-cynical conversation about our relationship to the universe that they just kind of cranked out. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that it really was like, not that Spielberg wasn't trying, but the whole time he was making Jurassic Park, he's like, I just want to work on Schindler's List.
Exactly. It's like the Universal
movies.
Which
is hilarious.
The Universal monster movies, I feel like every so often, or maybe not the specifically the Universal ones, but like a lot of monster movies around that time, every so often at the end, especially sci-fi films, will drop a thing at the end where they're just like, and by the way, is America the real alien or something? And you're like, oh, you put some depth in there. Jurassic Park, every 5 minutes, like, and here's a new deep thought. And here's a new deep thought. And here's a new deep thought. Now run, run. Now let's talk about like the uncanny
sexism
nature of
survival situation. Right?
Yeah.
Turns out it's man. No, you're so right about that, where it's not to disparage anything, but it's like sometimes for me watching like bold-faced dramas don't make sense because that's not how like my life works, and that's not
right.
how I deal with my problems, for be it to you to judge. But to me, genre fiction always made more sense. Like to me, it's like when I think about the dilemma of, you know, these kind of like childhood things that when you talk to people about Jurassic Park specifically, you're like, wait, Alan and Ellie were together?
Right.
And it's like, well, if you think about it, they're on a business trip.
Mm-hmm.
So of course they're going to try and be professional.
Right.
And, you know, and to me, like rewatching the movie today, it's like the only time where you get a very clear indication, but it's done in such a like two grown men uncomfortable, like with each other. Dr. Sadler, she's not like available. And Alan is like, why? And he's like, oh, okay. So it's like never explicitly stated. It's done in this very like, I mean, I think Jeff Goldblum is definitely more queer now.
Right.
You know, it still was a very like bro-y. They're not directly confronting it, you know?
I would like to claim Alan Grant and possibly Ellie Sattler within the Grey Ace community. Because
oh, interesting.
They're so chill with each other in like that non-blatantly affectionate way that I feel like you'd have to communicate in a movie. And then when Ian comes in and it's just like, I'm giving up
swing
some
his dick out.
Vibes.
You're on a business trip, motherfucker.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Have some decorum.
He's just like, what about the ladies? And Alan Grant's like, I don't know how to process this.
Who was I talking to? I don't even think it was on a podcast, but it might have. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But we were talking about how like Malcolm would be the one getting laid at math conventions, you know?
Yes.
And it's like, this is bad. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Ian Malcolm existed before cancel culture. And damn, is he lucky. Damn, is he single-handedly very lucky for that. Because, and I think in the next movie, they kind of like round out some of those edges. But boy, in Jurassic Park, is he like, whatever. And you're just like, don't touch people's hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what was I going to say about that? Oh, about, Brenna's coming in. We're just talking about Alan and Ellie.
We're just talking about Alan and Ellie.
I wrote down my train of thought. We're in a different room now.
Yeah, we moved rooms.
I know. I can't wait till this is like an actual proper studio space. I mean, there is a lot of Jurassic stuff around. So, you know, it's kind of setting the vibe.
100%. I'm looking at a tiny little dinosaur baby shirt.
So what I was going to say, because we were talking about genre fiction, relationships, you were saying that Ellie and Alan would be a good example of like an ace couple.
Yeah.
And I love this because Spielberg doesn't really do deleted scenes. It feels like he just says,
right.
Or like he doesn't sit with them. You know, he just kind of like, obviously Lost World has like two big examples that for some reason are put back in for Cable. What's very funny is that the cut moments that we see from Jurassic Park that have like leaked online over the years, it's like moments that are like too much PDA.
Right.
Again, for me, it's, I think it's very interesting that Spielberg made Jurassic Park in such a way that, you know, almost 30 years later, people are like, wait, they were a couple?
Right. There's something so interestingly, I think, in that personal, right? There's something very personal about that with those characters.
Yeah.
Because they're not these sort of, like the fact that, I think it's the fact that it's their relationship on their terms and we as the audience never privy to it. We don't have to like have our hands held, walked through like, here's how they met and here's what they did. They were just kind of like, we're a couple. And then they clearly like don't see eye to eye on a couple like their, you know, lifestyle things of what they want, like for the future.
Yeah.
At least in the beginning of the movie, but at no point are we like, that doesn't seem good. Do you know what I mean?
There's not like a scene later in the movie where like it's like, no, I want kids.
Right. I mean, in Jurassic, Lost World, there's a scene where it is like, here is why the relationship is not working. Whereas in this, they're just like, baby smell, they smell. And you're just like, they seem happy.
Yeah.
Like, they seem like very happy with each other.
Yeah, that's a great point. Again, deleted shots are like Alan sweeping Ellie off her feet and making
right.
Her, they cut the high five.
Yeah.
That's one of the most intimate
yeah.
things. Yeah.
It's very interesting. And it plays like so fluidly in the movie. Like it just works. And it's so funny. You're like, these are two characters.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we're so from the outside of it that it's almost like you meet two people and you're like, are they roommates or coworkers? Or?
Well, I like the way you framed it because it almost is like the scenes that we're not seeing are maybe the more like intimate personal moments of like
right.
them comforting each other. Like you get a little bit of that when Ellie escapes from the bunker and mm-hmm. and Alan is looking for her, you know, and she kind of like leaps at him, you know, but like that's just what you would do if you were attacked.
Right, exactly.
Her.
Right. Right. There is no sort of Pearl Harbor of it all. Do you know what I mean? Like there is no like, and by that I mean the movie, not the actual event.
Of course.
Like, sorry, I really feel like I should clarify on that.
Clarification.
There's no Armageddon of it. Like, you know, where I feel like there's like this bleeding.
Don't want to close my eyes.
Like they might be even like in a way aromantic or something like that. But in a way that I feel like Indiana Jones characters have, they're like attracted to one another, obviously, but they're not attracted to anyone else.
Interesting.
And that's like a fun sort of aspect, I feel like, with these Spielberg characters in a lot of these movies. They're like, I love seeing them together because, like, you know, Indy can flirt with someone, but he doesn't want to spend any time with them. Like, he's so clearly just like, I just want to play with my maps and read my books and go punch Nazis. And then, you know, he like bumps into Marianne and he's just like, this is it. You know, like I'm obsessed with this person. And there's something so fun about that. And then when Ian comes in, he's like, I'm attracted to everybody. So, you know, let's all flirt together. And they're just like, we don't really do that. You
know? Slow down. Well, and I find that interesting that there is more people nowadays. And I wonder, like, I think just because Sam Neill as an actor loves to play unlikable or like not unlikable, but not easy to love characters.
Yes.
And yet Sam Neill, the actor, especially during the pandemic, became one of the most beloved people on Twitter.
God. Just him and his sheep, him and his pig
playing ukulele, playing piano.
Yep. Making really bad wine jokes.
Yeah. So I would say this is the transition, but that's just been a lot of what's been on my mind. Watching this movie is just like water. Like
yeah.
It's just, I think you were saying like, just close your eyes and you can just pick up any.
100%. 100%. It is the amusement park ride that transcends being just an attraction. It's like when I feel like we all have like one of these. I think for me, oddly enough, it might be the Cars ride at California Adventure, where, or Storm River, California, rest in peace. But where you get on and you're just like, you exhale and you're just like, oh, thank God. Everything just makes sense about it. You know, like, there's something very comforting about that, even when things are terrifying.
Oh, yeah,
just
for
like,
sure.
And it is such a scary movie, a genuinely horrifying movie at times. And that suspense is done so well, which I think that I took for granted because we were so lucky in the 90s between like him and Joe Dante and folks. Mm. You know, it was like Twister and stuff like that. You're just oh, damn, like genuinely terrifying suspenseful moments. And then when we kind of got out of a lot of this practical stuff, it was just like, even some horror movies, I'm just like, ah, oh, you're having to jump out a lot at me.
Well, yeah, it's like they got to make bigger swings because, you know, sometimes CGI feels kind of weightless. So
yeah.
It's just like they got to just go bigger and bigger. But again, just like, I don't mean to be like so meta about just doing this, but it's just like, oh, I'm going to take notes. And I'm like, I don't
have to.
I don't. What is there to talk about? This
right.
is like literally, but in a good way of like,
yes.
So for me, I guess my question to you is rewatching this. And I don't know when the last time you just sat down and watched Jurassic Park, but like, yeah, what were like, did you notice anything new? Or again, because I feel like for me, it wasn't that there wasn't new things I picked up on, but it was just very like, yes, this is the thing I love. Like inspired
yeah.
by you again of like, I kept a cry counter for Jurassic Park of like,
yes.
well, now this, all this is just reminding me of the people I love and like the good times. Like that's
yeah.
literally what this movie is for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's old buds. It's old cinema buds too. Cause I feel like so much of it one thing I was really paying attention to was, I was like, what evokes the emotions for me? And so much of it was the shots and the movement of a camera or doing something that we see in like later movies kind of like get imitated or repeated, which is really fun. But it is this simple thing of like something moving in a frame, the T-Rex lowering her head, and then the eye, you know, like tensing at that pupil, like changing when the flashlight is pointed and stuff like that. It's just those little things where I'm just like, oh, that's great. It's just, I don't know. It's like an orchestra landing the note at the same time, you know? Like,
beat is dropping every 5
exactly.
seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was so much of that stuff, I think, for me,
mm-hmm.
where I was like, it's, of course it's the lines. Of course it's the performances. Of course it's all these things. But I think it's like, there's certain moments when there's like, this alchemist has mixed everything together. And I don't mean to put it all on one person, because it's this entire hardworking collection of artists,
yeah.
you know, that did it. But it's just like when the light hits the costume and the sound is perfect on the line of dialogue and the music, you know, also hits a note, and all of it comes together as the camera just pulls up to Alan's face or Ellie just turns her, you know, you're just like, wow, that's good.
Well, and to your earlier point, and I think probably what we were getting towards earlier when we were talking about our time in school on this podcast, a lot, I've asked a lot of people of like, why hasn't there been a better dinosaur movie
right.
since Jurassic Park? And I think right. that's not being hyperbole. I mean,
yeah,
what dinosaur movie has been better since right. the original? Again, not to disparage anything, but I feel like sort of maybe like a subconscious consensus has been sort of like, well, at the time, not only was it, you know, a great, you know, just a fun, it was Spielberg in his prime.
Yep.
It's a monster movie that's elevated because it's done by like a masterclass filmmaker and great actors.
Mm-hmm.
But also it was like, oh, this is the first time we're seeing dinosaurs for real.
Right.
Which is just hard to replicate. Like, it's yeah. just, who knows when all that kind of stuff will come together. So in that way of like us connecting in college and like meeting, it's like, oh yeah, like this isn't some blockbuster machine, man, you know, Breathless, you know, what, like, this is a great movie.
Yeah.
Full stop, you know? And so I don't need to be like, I mean, I don't know if I was like ever ashamed of liking this movie, but it definitely was like, oh yeah, like, I think nowadays, like, you know, 10 years into the MCU, like, obviously mm-hmm. nerd culture is just pervasive. And I think we've like moved beyond irony.
Yeah.
Look, if you pretend to like something long enough, you just like it.
Exactly.
You know? Adam Murray keeps getting B movie gifts. Like, right. you know what I mean? Like, so I think it's like, I think like when we were in college, you know, as things like the MCU were happening and things were starting to be remade and stuff like that, it was just sort of almost like the perfect time for us to be like, oh yeah, these things we liked as a kid, they have value beyond like whether it's just a good or whatever movie. Their value is in the experience that it gave us. And like, how many movies made people want to be paleontologists? How
right.
many movies made people want to be a filmmaker?
Right.
Because you saw Jurassic Park, and every person I've talked to is like, well, it either made me want to be a paleontologist or made me want to be a filmmaker.
Right.
Like, how many, what other movies?
100%.
You know, like,
yeah,
I'm just gestating. Like, I'm on a podcast. You know what I yeah. don't know. That's just me, like, word vomiting.
I think you'd have to get into like Miyazaki and animators or something, right? Like, to find another one that you'd be like, this points to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you'd go back to Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it would have to be something sort of that massive, but I feel like there's something so interestingly quiet about the genre. I know that later we do get to dinosaurs all the time, but this is the movie, because, you know, watching the other two, it's been something that I've been like, what's different about these ones? And it takes so long for them, because the whole gimmick of it, I mean, you do get this massive reveal, you know, when they get out of the Jeep and stuff like that. But after that, it's this slow crawl of the zoo gone wrong, that, you know, the Michael Crichton of it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's you just getting little glimpses, and like, you see a goat before you see a dinosaur, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and, you know, credit to Jay Bayona sort of being like, what's interesting about Jurassic Park is that there were action set pieces in the movie that didn't involve dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so for like Fallen Kingdom, like, I appreciated that element of having an action set piece or two that didn't involve dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And to your point, because when we were texting about this, I loved your idea of thinking of these, you know, because again, it's like in some weird way, like I have more notes for The Lost World than I do for Jurassic Park, because like in your brain, you can't help but compare, you know?
Exactly.
And so for part of me, and, you know, we'll get to Lost World, you know, in the next episode. But again, like I was keeping what you said in mind. Oh, The Lost World is a movie that is all about like vacillating between like camp and like Richard Attenborough documentary. Right. So it's like Universal Monster, Planet Earth. And like finding the joy in that is like what makes that movie unique. But we'll get to that later.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I guess for you watching movies, especially a movie that you love, is there like a way that you, I mean, especially with Jurassic Park, are there things that you gravitate towards every time? Or those, the like, are there things that you think of every time you watch the movie? Or does it?
I'm asking a million questions.
Because again, for me, it's like, I just am reminded of life experiences at this point. And
yeah.
I guess for you, like, what were some things that the movie brought up for you?
It's so interesting because, you know, I think as I get older, it's the only way I can really harken back to what it was legitimately like. This is getting into mortality, so this starts to get a little deep. You know, like I think about every set, like I've always been very interested. I think this is sort of like a filmmaker instinct in a sense where it's like you want to capture something, right? And like, I think when I got old enough to realize that childhood is temporary, it's not like a permanent state and you're just like, oh, whoa, like my 5-year-old self is going to disappear, you know, in a way, like I won't have those instincts or whatever anymore. You start to then try to sneak a lot of that stuff into stories so that you can at least reference it. And then it gets harder. And like,
oh,
you know what I mean? Like now, even as like, I'm in like my 30s now and thinking back, like, what was it like to be 19? I can't. It's really hard to remember, you know, it's really hard to remember like what those instincts were like.
Yeah.
And what's so fascinating about Jurassic Park is that it was something that was so concrete. You know, my family went on trips and stuff together, but like, it really did feel like when we watched movies, it was a big event and it was like a unifying event for my family. And this is a long preamble, I suppose, to saying that like I still get the joy of seeing daytime park. And that to me is the most exciting thing, where it still takes me back to being a kid and being terrified of this VHS that my parents were just like, are you sure you want to watch, you know? Because it's so scary in the beginning, it's still so scary and so jarring, and just like these quick cuts and these like RoboCop monsters just fluttering, you know, just like going about these killing machines. And then finally when you get back to daytime, you're like, keep it in the day. And it's just so beautifully woven in, where all the time you get to spend in the day, I just, in my mind, most of the movie takes place in daylight with them just going and checking out the park, because as a kid, I just held on to those scenes so hard, or like white knuckles, where I was just like, don't let the sun set, don't let the storm come, because I know it's coming and it's just terrifying after that, until finally we get back outside after the raptors and stuff. And that is so, like, that still sticks with me. And I just feel like that was such a good conscious decision, which is something I loved in Fallen Kingdom as well. It was like, I feel like we got back to that, like the night, you know, it just got to nighttime and I was like, this won't be good. You know, I just like knew. I was like, even the action, like you're saying, like the action scenes during the daytime on the island in Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah.
It is, I know there are dinosaurs there, and that's a part of it, but really those action set pieces are escaping from like volcano stuff.
Yeah, you know, almost drowning.
And almost drowning and
Look,
stuff like
that.
You
get to see dinosaurs swim. That's fun.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of fun in a way. Like at no point during the daytime scenes are you just like, I have to feel emotionally worried about this stuff until like there's like one or two tear jerking moments. But then when the sun sets at the end of that movie and you're watching the third act and like people are driving up to the house and stuff, it took me back to Jurassic Park where I was just like, don't like this. Not safe. You know, it feels very like primal in a way. Yeah. And I am just amazed that even after all these years of talk, I watched this movie at least once a year. At least once a year.
Yeah, yeah.
It still can give that primal response of nighttime scary, noise is scary.
I mean, again, like the cry counter. But also when Rexy roars at Grant the first time. I mean, and I've been really into VR lately. To have a movie like make you feel you are like actually standing in front of like a giant thing that's like could eat you, like is wild.
Yeah.
And to your point earlier, I definitely felt the same way, you know, and I think it's something that's like hard, like in a way can feel hard to talk about. In a weird way, this time watching it was really nice because again, it's like these moments where I'm like, oh, I can't, like so many people are like, oh, why don't you go watch Jurassic Park at the drive-in or like see it in theaters again? And it's like, this is so personal for me. Like nobody wants to see me like crying, like like heaving, sobbing because it's like, I mean, it's an outlet, you know?
Yeah.
But in that way of like, I feel like watching this time was like a really good corner because I mean, I should take what you're saying. How do you get that feeling and extend it into the things that you do?
Yeah.
Which I really like. I mean, our good buddy, Evan, you know, he's been in LA for a long time, but like we don't see each other as much as like, I, you know, as we, you know, we were roommates for like 3 years, but I like remember probably drunk, like texting, like, I'm so grateful for you, man. Like, well, you know,
yeah,
but it was like one of those things when Art 7A, going back to UCSB, was this like performative art class.
Yep.
And I definitely, that was like a really, like, I'm still dealing with that class because it kind of like exposed a lot of things about the way I like interpret art or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still figuring out what all that meant.
Right.
But one of the things I'm so grateful for is that Evan taught me that like art is a gift that you can share with people. And I feel like you have that in common with Evan. I feel like you're somebody.
Oh, thank you.
Like, I feel like you're somebody who, and that's something that I like try and like, I actively, like if I'm making something, like,
yeah,
is this going to like give or take away? Like that's always like in my, that's been in my head ever since then.
Yeah.
But I love what you said about Jurassic Park of how can I octopus this into like other things of mine? Because it's like, I get this visceral reaction because it's like thinking of times when I was happy, like happiest, but it doesn't have to be something that's sad.
Right.
Cause I think that's kind of how I felt for a while. I was like a little embarrassed by it. And then, but I think now it's like, no, well, how can I share that? Like the fact that that's how much it means to me. It's like, well, how can I pass on that on to somebody else? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the hardest part of this entire, I'll say quarantine, not pandemic, because the hardest part of the pandemic was the fact that there was a global pandemic that happened. But the hardest part of quarantine for me, I think, was not being able to go to film events, because like going to movies and stuff like that is absolutely great. Like I absolutely love just going by myself to an ArcLight, rest in peace, and grabbing a beer and sitting down and watching, you know, Uncut Gems or something like that, and just being stressed out on my brain for 2 hours. But when you go to something like New Bev or something like that, and there was just like someone who's just like, look, here's a random movie, you know, like, or, you know, it was, we were so spoiled in film school.
Dumbo Drop. I don't know why that was the first reference I thought
great.
Of.
Yeah. Here's Dumbo Drop. And the thing is, you know, I watched this when my dad was in the hospital and this pulled me through and I'm just, you know, let's watch it and talk about it. I'm really obsessed with it. And it's just these weird little things that you can share. And like in film school, we were so spoiled because professors would just come in and just tell you this massive thing about a movie. You know, they're just like, Saturday night, Sunday morning. I was like, this is the argument for, like, this is the most anti-capitalist film you'll ever watch in your life. And it's just about some guy in England. And it's just, there's something about that that is like, that's the thing I've been missing, is just like sharing those, that stimulation. And not in terms of just like constantly getting like a dopamine rush, but it does feel like there is a weird sense of connection.
I mean,
you know?
That's why I love opening movie nights, you know? And I, in a way, I feel bad for feeling so strongly about that when people are like, oh, just watch it on Sunday, or like, I'll catch it maybe on when it comes out on video. And I'm like, but the feelings of like opening night, that electricity. And I described this, I don't know why I'm plugging my Jurassic Park book that I wrote before Jurassic World came out, Molding a Jurassic Universe. But if anything, it just made me think of when we all saw Jurassic World together.
Yeah.
And I think we live in this kind of world now where we appreciate when people are passionate about other things because life is just so fucking hard that we're like, you love that thing? Good for you.
Yeah.
I love your love. I wrote about it was like a article a year later or something after the book came out, but it was like for the header, I photoshopped myself onto Steve Zissou's face when he finally sees the shark, and everyone just like, because in that movie, it represented this trauma of like losing his best friend in this kind of like Moby Dick-esque futile chase. And like, he finally saw the shark and it's like everyone just like held on to him. And to me, there was like an element of that when we all saw Jurassic World together. And it was like, it didn't matter if we liked the movie, whatever. Yeah. It just was like, oh, I'm feeling so loved right now.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? I don't know.
It's, you know, it's so amazing because like everyone, when we went to go see that, and it was people from all over. And granted, like you did make a great night of it where everyone got like slap bracelets and stuff.
I forgot about that.
But like we went, the thing is like we went before to like a place to grab some drinks and stuff like that and meet up so we could all just like get our catches, you know, our catching up out of the way. We made sure we were in the seats like on time. We sat down. We watched the thing. At the very end, a guy yelled, "Roll it back." Do you remember that?
Holy shit. I totally, I didn't forget, but like, I feel like when we've hung out in many times since that moment, I feel like that is a special moment that we've talked to other people about. Like, isn't that insane? But amazing.
Afterwards, there was so much reaction to it. And I think that's what's so cool about it is that like there is this like experience, and it's not tangible, like not to get back into film theory stuff that we were talking about earlier, but you can't touch it. You can't hold it. Like you can hold like a DVD or whatever, but like the thing, the fact that we can't go there, it is not a thing you can take and ingest. I think this like explains like why looking around this room, there's so much stuff, is because we keep making these like totems and things that we're like, can we get close to this weird space that
just
we all
hugging
in?
This Brachiosaurus toy tightly. Yeah. Like, what was Elisa's film where it's like the copy of a copy?
Oh, Simulacrum?
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
And that whole thing. You're just a copy of a copy. Yeah, I mean, Mia said it best. Mm-hmm. It is interesting that in Jurassic World, when the big flourish happens, Brachiosaurus, welcome to Jurassic Park. You know, that happens when you see a dinosaur.
Right.
But that moment in Jurassic World is when you see a real theme park. Like Jurassic Park is
100%.
So it's this like layer of 100%. Us being like, oh, we always wanted to see a working dress. You know, every Jurassic Park podcast, because it is a great question.
Yeah.
Is like, would you go to Jurassic Park? I've asked it on this podcast too. That's the genius of that moment. I think I've realized more and more, just trying to like capture
it. Cause I think,
something.
I think what it is like,
that wasn't very stoner. Just trying to capture
it. You know, it's just like, I think a huge aspect of it too, is that there is this non-blatant, and I feel like the MCU shares this quite a bit, that there is, and I would say like also folks who are really the non-toxic fans of Snyderverse, I don't want to get in trouble for saying that. Don't at me about it. Hey, listen, man, I like Man of Steel, so I'm not here to fight.
Look, Maggie Lovett, my dear friend who I've had on my Star Wars pod a bunch, she's the best. She was an extra. You can see her a bunch in Wonder Woman 2. She said on Twitter, if you like Star Wars, you fought in the Star Wars. I'm like, yes.
That's so it. There's something where like, you know, when you're talking about a thing, when there's just a very surface level nerdiness of it, where you're just like, this is a popular thing, let's talk about it, right? And then there's another level where you're agreeing on something. And I love that with through movies, it's kind of hard to say exactly what it is. And I feel like DC is such an interesting version of that. I think Marvel's a little bit more upfront where they're just like, our villains are like, they can't dance and they're jerks. And you're just like, yeah, actually, you know, that's, we're all pretty unified in this. But like, I feel like with with DC, it's a very interesting example where there is something in there. I can't point to it. I can't point to a moment, but like there is something with Batman where I'm just like, if someone's like, I love Batman because he fights, you know, people who dress like penguins. I'm like, okay, whatever. But then there's some people who are just like, Batman's very important to me. And you just feel something, you know, like in your body, there's a chemistry that agrees where you're just like, I don't know what it is, but I agree with you. And there is something with Jurassic Park. And I don't know if it's a respect for nature or optimism or...
How many weddings have the Jurassic Park theme song?
Right.
We have friends.
Right. Our friend Kristen, who, you know, we're on the... Maybe Will Wheaton will show up Jurassic Park party together. You know, her wedding... Classic. Full on dinosaurs. Didn't want to make it JP because it didn't want to be like a branded sort of situation, but it was very, you know, clearly JP. I wore a Jurassic Park shirt under my dress shirt, which
there's
I later
some,
took
like,
off.
Tammy and the T-Rex references right? And some Carnosaur and some We're Back just to make it fair.
Oh, it's exactly. Just to sort of not playing favorites. But there is something I feel like when you do connect, and I hesitate to say it's in fandom. Right, I feel like fandom is almost like a different thing. I feel like fandom is more Comic-Con. I feel like Jurassic Park is you're just hanging out with some, like someone's, you know, boyfriend, and he doesn't know anyone. So you're just chatting with him, and you're like, "What are you into?" And you're like, "Oh, the Chargers moved," and you know, whatever. And then later, so you know, Chargers, you know, there was a joke in Lost World. Sorry, that's a weird thing. And you're like, "Hold on, do you like Jurassic Park?" And it's like, "I love Jurassic Park." And suddenly you're just like, "We got it."
I mean, Jurassic Park is, you know. People sometimes don't even know how many sequels there are. Like, it's right. Just, you know, so yeah. It's an interesting like thing to love. And it's been a thing of like, and I think you and I are similar in that sense of like, well, obviously I, you know, love Jurassic Park and can create an argument for why I love every movie. And I do generally love every movie and I can get into that lore and stuff. Like I've been obsessed with Ben Meckler's Mortal podcast recently.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm coming from a similar place of like, but also, we know a lot of people who might only know that Jurassic Park has 4 sequels, you know,
right.
And a short film, you know, and Camp Cretaceous is really good, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I feel like I enjoy living, and I guess this is wrapping up, but in doing this, again, I just wanted to hang out with you and then like, let's, and I wanted Abigail to make that sweet art. The things that I was thinking of watching Jurassic Park, like it wasn't, you know, because I even like wrote down like Dominion connections to things, like, you know, thinking about it like in that nuts and bolts kind of way.
Right.
But it's like, honestly, I just wasn't thinking about that stuff watching.
Yeah.
Like I just was thinking of like 22nd birthday dressed up as Malcolm.
Yep.
And Annie dressed up as Kathy, all bloody. Like I'm like trying to think of one specific memory. I'm thinking of a million memories, but like, you know, just going Universal or, you know, it's like a walk down memory lane now. Like every moment in Jurassic Park is marked with here's like a time and like here's people I saw this with. Like at the end of this episode, I'm going to play 1993, that song I did. Mm-hmm. You did the Hammond impression. That was really great. That's the thing I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any other movies that do that for you?
You know what? That's such a good, I'm positive there because I think what the thing is that it's just a movie. I think a lot of films have to be elevated to a thing where it's like, it made this change and it did this and that's all very historically important. Or it'll be something where it's like,
they gave their Brachiosaurus guns.
And then they turned them into walkie-talkies and Steven was like, I'm so sorry about this and turned them back. But like, it's you know, honestly, I do have an answer for this. It's this or episodes of the show Goosebumps.
I was, you know, it's funny. I was kicking myself for not getting this out sooner, but you did Jurassic Park in Spanish.
That was great in high school.
And the thing I say all the time to people is Omar made an episode of Goosebumps that had better production value than the actual Goosebumps show. I say that I've definitely said that to like 10 people.
My roommates hated that we took 2 days. They did not understand, did not process what was happening.
Come on, they use the dog bark setting on the keyboard. Anyway, sorry.
But it's something in that where it's like, and this is something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I'm just like, this is the energy I'm trying to bring into Jurassic June, where it's like, it's pulp in a way where it is, I'm really starting to appreciate the things that are just fun. And it's, I think, and there's so many bigger things that we get to talk about, but all those things, because it comes from a core of something just being pulpy fun, that those things also become fun. And I think that, like, for example, like a movie, like, you know, when people talk about Arrival or something like that, it's just like, or Primer, where it's just like, but what is this? Let's figure it out. Or I feel like sometimes, like,
we don't live here anymore. Later. I don't know why that was.
But like later Nolan films and stuff, people, we've gotten kind of into, does this make sense? Does it work? Marvel shows where it's like, did this all connect? Do we get the thing right? And while I'm not saying that's everyone's experience, like whatsoever, that's mostly if you're like watching way too much, you know, YouTube nerdy stuff. But like, I truly love that. I feel like when you talk to someone about Jurassic Park, and the reason I bring up Goosebumps is because it is unabashedly fun. And it might not be positive. I don't think it's negative. I'm not saying it makes you a morally better person, yeah. Although I do think that it does make you, I personally think that watching Jurassic Park makes you a better person, but it's not even about that. It's not some Oscar sort of like tempting stuff where it's like, but it'll solve racism if you watch the movie. It is something where it is like, it is absolutely an amusement park of a film. And I think there's something so important and so uniting that people from all around the world can watch this film and just have fun.
Yeah, it's like water.
Exactly.
It's like rippling water.
Exactly.
I mean, I think, you know, that's as good a place as any. I love you, man. This was so much fun.
Right back at you, man.
You know, I had notes. Let me...
But yeah, what did you write down?
Just to like entertain the fact that I wrote down notes earlier.
We didn't talk about like Nedry or... Because we've said so much.
I mean, there are 5 Jurassic Park movies. Mm-hmm. There's 1 short film. There's 2 seasons, soon to be 3, of an animated TV show. And a couple of video games and a book.
The Topps comics. That if you know the movie, you know the comics.
And it's just like, oh, I don't want to just come on here and say things. I mean, I'm sure I've repeated myself, but what was I going to say? Oh, Malcolm invented Snark.
That's a great note, Steven.
Well, thank you, Omar.
Thank you.
Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
You can follow me if you want. You don't have to, but if you want to find me on Twitter.
I mean, you've been on this podcast. Again, literally the last time we saw each other was when you were on this podcast.
Yeah.
But again, it was right before the pandemic.
So. At Omar Najam on Twitter. I also am running Hatbox Goat. That is Hatbox Goat. It is a fake Disneyland announcements Twitter. I'll pitch that. I might hop on TikTok as well, just because I'm a man in my 30s sitting around doing nothing.
Well, also every year, you, when people live tweet the Oscars, you live tweet an Oscar from the past.
For another year.
Which is cool. You did 93 before, right?
I believe so.
Or I remember you. Well, I guess Lion King was like 94.
Yeah.
Or maybe you did Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast
91.
Was, yeah, because I also learned a lot about animation that year because they were like, they didn't care at all about it. So,
but we're going to give Beauty and the Beast the Best Picture nomination.
And then they were just like, oh, we got to figure out. And then I think after that, they're like, we should probably. No, it wasn't animated. Didn't even come till Shrek.
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah. So good job, Shrek.
Anyway, it's very funny when you do it. But to me, the funniest was when you did just like a year before, and it was like,
it was last year's Oscar.
Like, what the hell? Like, what's happening? But I love it so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll hear Stephanie's amazing synth Jurassic Park cover probably playing over this right now. But stick around for that 1993 and Omar's great John Hammond impression.
I was only 6 years old, and if I may be so bold,
alive, that's how they knew. We clocked the T-Rex at 32, and believe me, I felt fear. My father asked, do you want to stay here? But I would not stumble. It was just too beautiful, and I still remember 1993. And I still remember, and I still remember 1993. Some odd years, and I feel the same old fears. I am pulled and then I'm pushed, and being here is not enough. But if I could have one wish, I would ask, how did you do this? I refuse to fade away, and life will find a way. And I still remember 1993. And I still remember, and I still remember 1993. And I still remember 1993. And I still remember, and I still remember 1993.
So astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.